हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So now it's been now after Narad Muni had discussed with the Pandavas about making an arrangement with Draupadi, how each one of them would spend time so that there would be no jealousy or any fighting. So then they arranged that whoever she's with, if anybody else comes in the room, then they'll have to go to the forest for a year. And so then, that arrangement was going on. It had been going like that for a year. And so, you know, everything was peaceful. But then one day, then the Brahmin came that the thieves were stealing his cows. So he came and he asked for help. So Arjuna wanted to help, but the weapons were all in Arjuna, in Yudhishthira's room, and Draupadi was there. So then he came in, got the weapons, went out, defeated the bandits, got the cows back, you know, and then right after that, so they all thought, okay, he's done a good job, you know, protecting the Brahmins. But then he asked, okay, now it's time to go to the forest. And they're saying, you know, what do you mean, go to the forest? Yeah. Like that. He said, "My lord, please give me permission to observe the vow as we have agreed. I shall leave for the forest at once." Yudhishthir stared at his younger brother in disbelief. What was he saying? In a voice trembling with grief, he immediately replied, "Why should you go, sinless Arjuna? If I am your authority, then heed my words. I was not in the least disturbed by your entering the room. You do not need to leave for the forest." Yudhishthir looked tearfully at his handsome, curly-haired brother. How could he face separation from this virtuous and gentle soul? He explained to Arjuna how scripture sanctioned a younger brother entering a room where his elder brother sat with his wife, right, because they represent like mother and father. It was only when the elder brother intruded upon the younger that it was condemned, right, because then it's like the son and daughter. Arjuna had entered the room only in pursuance of duty, and in service to Yudhishthir, right? So from all those angles, the Shastra says that it's fine if the younger brother comes into the elder brother's place, and that he was, performing his duties, and he was protecting, you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj's reputation. So from all angles, it was fine. So technically, yes, according to Shastra, it's not wrong, but they had made a vow that this is what they were going to do. If it was just a regular occasion, then he might feel bad that, you know, I came into your room and all. And he would have explained this and been fine. But they took a vow that no one goes into each other's room. But Arjuna was adamant. "My lord, I have heard from you that virtue must be practiced without hesitation or quibble. I shall not waver from truth. Truth is my weapon and virtue my strength. Grant me permission to leave, and I shall proceed to the forest today." Despite the other Pandavas' repeated pleas, Arjuna could not be swayed. Finally, Yudhishthir relented and gave his permission. Although it would be painful to think of his younger brother in exile for so long, it must somehow or another be the arrangement of providence. Surely the Lord had some inscrutable purpose that would ultimately prove to be to their benefit. Right, so he's thinking, they can't convince him anyway, and they're all discussing and all that because it was all together they made this determination. And so then Yudhishthira understands, okay, Krishna must have some plan. There's something, some special thing will happen from this. He sadly watched as Arjuna left the city accompanied by Brahmins chanting sacred hymns and by servants carrying wealth for him to distribute as charity while he traveled. Right, so he's going for a year. So that means, and they're carrying wealth to distribute. It's a lot of wealth to distribute for, you know, if he's going to go for a year. Because it means when you go out like this for a year, you go on pilgrimage. You don't just go sit under a tree and then, you know, feel grumpy. You go out and go to all the pilgrimages. You just travel around and you come right, come back to where you were. So wherever you are, so they'll be in Indraprastha, then they'll go down the Ganges, and they'll go down to South India, he'll come up the western coast of Dwarka and that, and he'll, you know, come back to Indraprastha. So, and generally that pilgrimage itself, you know, walking, it probably won't take you some months. But because you stop at the holy places, you take bath, you do rituals, you do these kind of things, then it's generally a very standard thing to take a year. Like Balaram went on pilgrimage also of all these places. He went for a year. Well, he didn't go because of Samvrata. He went because he didn't want to get involved in the fight between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. The young prince went on foot towards the north. He had decided to first follow the Ganges course towards the Himalayas, then proceed eastward to the coast. So he was going to go up the Ganges on one side till he got to the Himalayas. Then he'd turn, and then the other side he'd walk all the way down until he got to the coastline. You know, in other words, where the Ganga goes down into the ocean, you know, the Sagar. Because that's a standard thing, is if you're doing one vrata is wherever you are, let's say you're here, you go on the Ganges, then you go all the way. You can go either way, but generally you go clockwise. So then you would go from wherever you're going. Then you would go up to the Himalayas or Gomukh. Then you come down the other side, go all the way down to the ocean. Then you come back again on that side there. You know, and so that to do that whole thing, you know, in other words, you're walking the length of the Ganges twice. And, you know, taking bath every day in the Ganges, seeing the Ganges, along the Ganges is all the holy places and that, and temples and saintly persons. So it would be, it's considered a very purifying, you know, experience. But he was just going up, going down, and then from there he would continue South India and then go around. Arjuna traveled at a leisurely pace, right? So they weren't trying to get somewhere really quick. He saw charming woodlands, lakes, and gardens. There were countless hermitages along the banks of the Ganges, where sages lived, and each evening Arjuna would stop and recite prayers in their company. He would also listen as the sages narrated tales from the ancient scriptures about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord in his many incarnations. Arjuna often thought of his cousin and dear friend Krishna as he walked. He hoped to visit him towards the end of his exile, right? Because when he goes up to the Ganges, goes down to the Sagar, then goes South India, then when you're coming up on those side, the coast there, then you come to Dwarka. You know, if he's in Dwarka, if not, then he'll come to Mathura, and then from Mathura, then up to his place. But I think for this one, they were already at Dwarka. The Pandava listened to the sages describe how Krishna was the unborn original Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing on earth to destroy demoniac men and establish the eternal religion, pure love of God. And so everybody knows he's here, they're all talking, he's a devotee, you know, a pure devotee. As he traveled, Arjuna also performed fire sacrifices to please Vishnu and the gods. One evening, just as the Brahmins were kindling the sacred fire, Arjuna entered the Ganges in order to bathe, right? So then, in the evening, you'll set up everything for the yajna, you'll take your bath, and then after having taken your bath and chanted your mantras, then you'll come, sit at the yajna, do the yajna and all that. Then they will discuss, like it said, about, you know, the pastimes of the Lord, different scriptural things and all these kinds of things. So that would be how you would end the day. You know, you start the day that way. During the day you may do whatever you need to do. In this case, he'll be walking. And then in the evening, then they'll do this. He was just about to leave the river when he suddenly felt himself being drawn underwater by an unseen force. So he'd gone in, he must have bathed, and that he was ready to now leave the river, but just before that, then he started to go into the water. Despite his efforts to free himself, he was dragged deeply into the river. He then found himself mystically transported to a celestial palace. Arjuna looked around and saw a sacred fire burning in the room he had entered. The prince immediately sat before the fire and offered oblations of ghee into the flames, fearlessly reciting mantras. Because he was supposed to do his yajna. It was a time. He's dragged away suddenly in this celestial palace, and there's a yajna there. Everything's ready for him to do his puja. And so then he does his puja, but he says fearlessly. He wasn't like, where am I? What's it? No, it's just he's here, he's doing. Just as Arjuna was completing his evening rituals in that strange place, a beautiful girl entered the room. She glanced at Arjuna and smiled. He recognized her at once to be a maiden belonging to the celestial Naga race, right? Because you have all the different species of life, and so one of them's the Nagas, so they're the celestial snakes. They can also take human form, but you know there'll be some natural, features that they'll have that you know that it's a Naga, like that. Even they're in the human form, but the Nagas, when they take human form, there'll be certain traits that are there. So they'll be celestial, so they'll be very beautiful and very attractive, but there'll be some unique features. Arjuna understood what had happened. The Nagas have the power to transfer humans to their own heavenly dimension of existence. Like that. So it means you have the Bhumandala, and then right below that, then you're going to have where the Nagas are staying. So then they can transfer people. So through water, he transfers. Sometimes also they go into a hole here and come out in their place. So, you know, they're from the higher planets, so they have these mystic abilities. Obviously, this girl had become attracted to him and drawn him down to her abode. He smiled back and said, "Beautiful maiden, you have been bold indeed. Who are you and where is this divine region?" Right, so she came out, she smiled. So it's not that there's some problem that some adversary comes out and Arjuna, you know, I've been wanting to catch you for so long and now I have you and now you're going to see and, you know. No, it was just this Naga girl, celestial girl. She decided she wanted Arjuna as her husband, and so then when he was taking bath there, because they can move through the Ganges like that, because the Ganges goes from the earth and it goes down through all the planetary systems, all the way down to the bottom, then it goes all the way back up to Brahmaloka, and then from there it starts back down again. So it just keeps moving in a circle. So they can move through the Ganges, you know, in this case, you know, like this, and come out anywhere or go anywhere. So if they wanted, they could go that and go up to the heavenly planets, or they can paint like this. You know, it's yogis. That's the yogi's job. The girl replied that she was the daughter of a Naga king named Kauravya. Her name was Ulupi. When you entered the river for your bath, I was moving through the waters in my ethereal form. I was struck by Cupid's arrow as I saw your godlike beauty. O descendant of Kuru, I am yet unmarried. Therefore, accept me as your wife. Give yourself up to me and gratify me today. So she's asking that she was moving through an ethereal form, so they have these subtle forms that they can move through. And then she's not married, and she thought, okay, now here's someone worth marrying. So then she brought him to her abode, and now she's saying, you please marry me. Arjuna said he was bound by a vow of celibacy for 1 year, because that's the whole point. Is for that year they would go out and for a pilgrimage, and they couldn't spend any time with Draupadi. he could not therefore accept her as his wife, right? So the Kshatriyas, one of their duties is if a girl wants to marry them, then they accept. But it has to be according to religious principles. There can't be someone who's unqualified for them to marry or some other situation like that. So this element where the Kshatriya has to do something by his determination, his vow, but that's only if it's proper. Just like you say, like if someone may say, please, you do something for me. And then they'll say, yes, but it has to be according to Dharma. It can't be, you know, dangerous for themselves. You know, all these different things. It can't be something that will make them fall from their position, you know, of nobility. Like this, you can't just ask them to do anything. There's rules. Yes, you have to do anything if it's within the rules. If it's outside the rules, they don't have to be involved at all. Still, she was a Naga. He knew she must have already known this by her celestial intelligence. She would not have asked him to marry her if her request did not somehow conform to the codes of virtue, right? Because they're from the heavenly regions. Indeed, the scriptures enjoin that a Kshatriya would never refuse a maiden who supplicated herself to him. Arjuna asked her how he could satisfy her desire while at the same time maintain his truthfulness. Ulipi replied, I know of your vow, O hero. You and your brothers made a rule in regard to Draupadi. This is well known to the gods, right? Because Narad Muni came down and requested them to find something. And so then while Narad was there, they came up with the idea and all that, and then Narad left. So then the demigod, as he travels around the universe, then others are going to hear about this, because what's happening in the universe is Krishna's here on the earth performing his pastimes with the Pandavas and the Brajabasis and all these like that. So the universe will hear about these things. But that rule pertained only to your wife. It is her with whom you must not consort for the next year. There will be no sin in accepting another woman, right? So he can't spend time with Draupadi, but he could marry someone else like that. Filled with desire, Ulipi beseeched him to accept her. She explained that such an act would be the highest duty under the present circumstances. The Naga princess knew that Arjuna would act only when impelled by virtuous motives. Right? So he's not going to be impelled by lust or desire or any of these kind of qualities. You know, just because she's beautiful and this and that doesn't mean he needs to marry her. You know, unless it's something virtuous, as according to scriptures. She told him that if he did not accept her as his wife, she would destroy herself. Thus, he would be saving her life by accepting her. That was certainly a greater virtue. Even if his piety suffered a slight loss, he would gain greater merits by having saved the life of a helpless woman who had approached him for shelter. Arjuna thought carefully. He decided that the Naga maiden was speaking the truth and he would not be acting wrongly to accept her as his wife. He smiled and nodded in assent. Ulupi quickly fetched two celestial garlands, which she and Arjuna duly exchanged to signify their acceptance of one another. Right, because this is the Gandharva marriage. So in the heavenly planets and all that, it seems to be that's a fairly standard. They just exchange garlands and they're married. No other ceremony. Here, then, we go through the whole things because it's about the purification. So just as the boy goes to the Upanayanam ceremony, you know, the technicalities and that, and then all the rituals there, then the wedding ceremony does the same purification for the girl. Like that. And that way, then, they're both getting the same benefits, but in their own unique ways. You know, what will be the best benefit for the boy's nature, and what will be the best benefit for the girl's nature. So in the Vedic, you always see that the equality is there, but it's equality according to nature. Just like, let's say, I feed a dog and I feed an elephant. So the dog eats this much food, and the elephant eats hundreds of kilos. So if I say equal, does that mean now the dog's going to eat hundreds of kilos, or the elephant's going to eat only 1 kilo? So equal means everyone, according to their nature, then gets their facility. So then, okay. Then Arjuna spent the night with her in the court of his palace. Okay. And so he, you know, yeah. Then and all kinds of nice facilities and things to drink and like this. In the morning, Arjuna arose just before sunrise, right? Because that's the time to get up. Ulupi brought him back through the Ganges to the palace where he had bathed the night before. To the place, excuse me. They're at a palace. He's at a place. Before leaving him, Ulupi blessed Arjuna. You shall be invincible in water. Every aquatic creature will be vanquished by you in a fight. Right? So this is a good blessing. That means in the water he can't be defeated by any aquatic. And we'll see as it comes up, this boon will have a very, you know, good purpose, like that. After telling Arjuna that she would return to him later when he was back in his own kingdom, Ulupi vanished into the Ganges water, leaving Arjuna to be greeted by his followers. The ascetic Brahmins had seen by their own divine sight how the prince had been taken to the region of the Nagas. They met him as he returned and offered him their blessings. Arjuna related to them everything that had happened. The party continued on the Himalayas, because even though they can see and all that, they know all these things still, all these amazing activities that go on, one with the Pandavas and the devotees of the Lord, but also then, you know, dealing with the demigods and this and that. So you see Arjuna, he goes down to the Nagaloka, then you see he'll go up to Indraloka, and he'll go visit Pashupati, you know, Lord Shiva. So you see, he travels around the universe. The other four brothers, they do all their pastimes on the earth. But he is there, but he will move throughout the universe. The party continued on to the Himalayas and soon arrived at the Bhrigu Mountain, where the famous Vasishtha Rishi had once had his hermitage. Many Brahmins lived on that hill, and Arjuna distributed much charity to them. After bathing in a sacred lake on the Bhrigu Mountain, he walked on, visiting numerous other holy sites. Arjuna went towards the east, gradually descending from the Himalaya range. He reached the forest of Naimisharanya, said by the sages to be the very hub of the universe, right? Because the universe moves, it always turns. Everything in the universe is moving. So the whole universe itself is moving, and so that center on where it's turning, that's Naimisharanya, so that's why it's very special. And so then you see the whole Bhumandala, the whole 14 planetary systems, they'll move. The same time as then, you know, the sun and planets and all them will move. And so they're moving in one way, but the wind is blowing them the other way. So that means they're moving forward, but the wind's blowing them backwards. So every day they'll move forward one degree, you know, out of the 360. They'll move forward 1 degree, the sun. But at the same time, the wind's so strong, then in the same amount of time, it will go 360 around. Does that make sense? So wherever he is, he starts here, the wind will blow him around, and then he'll come to the one. So it means, you know, how you say, 359. And then the next day, you know, in moving forward, it'll be the same. So in 1 year, the sun will go all the way around in his path, but every day he'll go around, you know, Meru, the other way. So, you know, so it's interesting. And then the whole thing's turning, everything. Yeah, so it's all happening. From there he crossed over the rivers Nanda, Upananda, and the famous Kaushika, where the great Rishi Vishwamitra had performed asceticism for thousands of years in ancient days. Desiring to increase his piety, Arjuna traveled from one pilgrimage site to another along with his retinue. He performed many sacrificial ceremonies and gave much charity. When he reached the border of the kingdoms of Kalinga on the eastern coast, he bade farewell to most of his followers and entered the kingdom with only a few attendants. So it must be they traveled down, they carried everything, and by that time then so much charity had been given and all that, so he doesn't need this whole crew. So he sent them back, so just a few of the main Brahmins, and they would travel together. Arjuna journeyed through the forests, woodlands, and numerous towns and villages. He passed the great mountain Mahendra and finally arrived in Manipur, where he visited King Chitravahana in the city of Manalur. The king had an attractive daughter named Chitrangada. Arjuna saw her one day in the palace gardens, and so he approached the king and asked for his daughter's hand in marriage. Chitravahana replied that he would be delighted to see his daughter wed an illustrious heir to the Kuru race, because they're in Manipur, so way very far away, so a smaller kingdom and that, so there's a good chance that they may not be necessarily connected with other these great families. But it's not that they couldn't be, because it's, you know, and on some accounts, and it said that Rukmini, so Krishna's main wife, she was from Assam. That kingdom up there. The Kshatriyas, so they're not as such Assamese, or the kings of Assam. So there'll be royalty. But from that side, so then he went up there. So then Manipur is just a little farther than that. Arjuna was famous throughout the world as a hero without equal. But the king had one condition. Years ago, his ancestors had prayed to Shiva for a child. The deity had granted their request, saying, "You shall have a child. And from now on, all of your descendants will have a child, but one child only, to continue your race." So they asked him for a child, and then he gave the blessing. Everybody in your line will have a child, but only one. Otherwise, they'll get a child, and the next one won't have this, that. So he's just made it that everyone, but the only one. Chitravahana had only one daughter, right? So that means he wouldn't have any more children. So no son. If Arjuna begot a son with his daughter, he must leave the boy to become the next king of Manipur. Right, so this is then one of the Vedic methods on how someone can get a son. He has a daughter. There's a condition that the daughter's son will then be brought up like his son. He, you know, of course, his mother and father are there, but it means his son, even though he's his grandson, but like the son inherits the kingdom, or inherits, you know, whatever is his properties, that boy will inherit. And so all the duties of the king and everything. So it won't be just he'll get some inheritance, but he'll take up the duties. So therefore, Chitravahan is the king. Therefore, his grandson then would become the next heir, the next king, like that. So it's a system. Arjuna happily accepted the condition and was married to the princess with all due ceremony. He remained in the city for 3 months. When he saw that Chitrangada had conceived, he took his leave from her and the king, setting out again on his travels. Before leaving, he promised Chitrangada that he would return and bring her to his home in Indraprastha. Arjuna then made his way south along the coast. When he reached the southern coast, he found a large community of rishis. He asked them to point out the local pilgrimage sites, because he doesn't know there, you know, because along the Ganges, there's so many, and you know they're on the Ganges. And from one place, when you're at a holy place, then you'll ask where's the next one, and they'll tell you. And then you just keep going until you, like this. So in south, and he doesn't know, so he's asking, what are the holy places here? And the rishis informed him that there were 5 sacred lakes in that region, which could not be approached because they were infested with crocodiles. These lakes could confer great merits upon anyone who bathed in them, but as soon as a man entered the water, he would be carried away by one of the powerful reptiles. So you go to get that particular benefit, but then at the same time you'd be carried away from the crocodile. But, you know, your benefit's not lost, but, you know, you'll have to gain the merits or take advantage of the merits in next life, right? Arjuna saw an opportunity to serve the ascetics. Right, because he wants to do service to the ascetics and the Brahmins and everything as he goes. He remembered his boon from Ulupi, going to the lake named Agastya. After the famous Rishi who had once lived there, he dove into the water. A great crocodile immediately seized Arjuna's leg. Feeling the divine strength conferred by Ulupi, he grasped hold of the animal and pulled it out of the water. Arjuna dashed the creature onto the shore. It suddenly became limp, and a beautiful celestial maiden came out of the body. Seeing the wonderful sight, Arjuna asked, "Who are you, most beautiful one? Why have you committed such sins in this lake, carrying away holy ascetics?" Right? So then, you know, he appears, you know, that he's killed the crocodile, and then from that form then comes this you know, so, you know, some variety of apsara. The maiden stood before Arjuna with folded palms. "O mighty hero, I am the apsara named Varga, ever beloved of Kuvera." Varga explained that she had once been going with 4 of her friends to see Kuvera. As they traveled through the heavenly woodland region, means this area where they are, they saw a Brahmin meditating in a lonely place. He was extremely handsome, and he lit up the woods with his bodily effulgence. Right, so, you know, as doing his meditation austerities, then at Brahma Tejas, it just made him so bright that he would just light up his surroundings. The 5 upstars playfully tried to disturb his meditation. Right? So that's the difficulty. If someone has some power, then they like to use it to harass people. So even if it's just for fun, but still they harass. So one always has to be careful. That's why you see the Pandavas are so special. They have such great power, such great knowledge, such great abilities. They don't harass anybody with it. That's why everybody likes them. While you see Drona and Duryodhana and these others, no one really likes them because they do harass the proud. The 5 apsaras playfully tried to disturb his meditation. They danced and sang before him, trying to tempt him away from his ascetic practices, right? Because the girl is attractive, and then he's doing his austerities. So they want to see, is he more determined in his austerities, or are we so beautiful and attractive we can attack anyone? So that's a pride for them, that I'm so beautiful that even the sages can't maintain their meditation. So it's just false ego. That's the difficulty. Although unmoved by lust, the Brahmana was angered by their behavior. So it brought him out of his meditation. He wasn't desiring them. And so there was no lust, but he was annoyed that they would do that. He's meditating. He's not bothering them or anybody. They are moving through to Sikuvera. They could walk by. Who cares? But the point is that they stopped to try to bother him. Then that's the point. He then cursed them. As you attack me now without compunction, you five shall become crocodiles whose business is attacking others. Right. So just as for no reason they just attack, then he said that you'll become crocodiles. Because that's an interesting thing about a crocodile. Because there's different, you know, this same kind of reptile. Like you have alligators. Now alligator, when it's if it's not hungry, you can walk by it. It won't even bother you. But if it's hungry, you know, then it might catch you. But once it's eaten, then it doesn't bother anybody. And reptiles, because of they're cold-blooded, means their body is not kept warm by itself. It's just whatever the temperature is outside, that's what their bodily temperature is. So if it's warmer, they're warmer, they move quickly. If it's cold, they move slower. So because of that, they need about one-tenth the food of a living entity that's warm-blooded. So they eat something they don't have to eat sometimes for a month or something. They're just, you know, like that. They're funny like that. But now a crocodile, anytime there's something that can be eaten, they will catch it, even if they're not going to eat it. So they'll catch it and then stick it under a rock, under the water. And so later, whenever they're hungry, then they can come and get it. So that's the point of why a crocodile, because crocodiles, just for no real reason, they bother others. They're aggressive. The maidens at once came to their senses. Showing contrition, they begged the Brahmin for mercy. Right? Cause so if they had just been arrogant, then you know, it's just like that, but because they saw they were wrong, then they begged forgiveness, tried to act properly, and it, you know, it has to be sincere. He relented and told them that a powerful man would soon deliver them from their crocodile bodies. At that moment, the great sage Narad Rishi arrived there and told them to enter the five sacred lakes on Bharata's southern coast. Soon Arjuna would come and release them from their bondage. So this had come before. So soon, you know, it could mean thousands of years, hundreds, thousands. You don't know these things. Because when you're talking about a day of Brahma, then, you know, what's a few thousand years, right? Varga bowed before the Pandava and thanked him for delivering her. She then asked him to save her four friends, who lived in each of the four other lakes. Right? She was in one, they're in the others. Then by one, he's saving the Apsaras from the curse, because that was the point, is that it would be countered by a powerful person would you know, then free them from this. And then the lakes become free, so now the sages can bathe again in them and everything. Arjuna smiled and went quickly to each holy lake. He pulled out all the other crocodiles, and each time he watched as a maiden of shining beauty came out of the fierce reptilian body. The five Apsaras came together and, after offering Arjuna their respects, rose up to the heavens. Having made the lake safe again, Arjuna took his leave from the rishis and proceeded on his journey. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada.